call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum. We're going to get started. What I'd like to do first, we have a very special guest here today. So we'll ask Katie to come on up to the front here. And if you would simply like to state your name, who you represent for the record, and share with us what brings you to the Capitol today.
Awesome. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. My name is Katie Rogers, and I'm here with Minnesota FFA. So I am originally from Worthington, Minnesota. So I graduated last spring, and am currently attending South Dakota State University, go Jackrabbits, for agricultural education. I started off as a ninth grader in FFA. My dad is a past agriculture teacher and now teaches at a community college, Minnesota West, in Worthington. And so I knew right away that I wanted to be involved in FFA. And throughout my 4 years, I got to learn a ton about agriculture as well as gain really valuable leadership and speaking skills. And so when I was a senior, I decided to run for state office. And so I'm currently serving as the Minnesota State Vice President. And I'm here today to advocate for career and technical student organizations across the state of Minnesota. So some include Skills USA, HOSA, FCCLA, BPA, and then, of course, FFA. So today, if you see us around the Capitol, that's what we're here for.
Wonderful. Now, I did say we're going to have a lot of really difficult questions for you. Members, do we have any questions for the testifier? I'm just teasing. Thank you so much for being here today. We always look forward to having the FFA members here, and it's the best and the brightest state has to offer, so thank you.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
All right. So, do we have a quorum yet? All right. We do have a quorum, so I'm going to officially call the meeting to order. Members, we're getting some help with staff. The bill that we have up today, it did not make it into the folder. So we're waiting for the bill to get down here. We apologize, but we're making copies to get the bill down here. Pardon me. So it's coming. All right. So I think what we'll do, if I can have the commissioner to move forward. Right now, Deputy Commissioner, if you can move forward. And what we'll do is we'll take the emergency, the agriculture emergency account. We'll take that testimony while we're waiting for the bill. And then after that, then we'll move up Representative Smith. We'll have that hearing, and then we'll get back into the budget forecast. But before we go to the commissioner, Representative Ackland.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my wife busily made some cookies during Super Bowl preparations, and for some reason the Environment Committee members didn't want them, so I'm going to pass them around and help themselves because I don't want to take them home.
Thank you. So, thank you. I guess we're a little concerned why the Environment Committee didn't want them, but we'll definitely take them. Thank you so much for that. Deputy Commissioner, you've been here before. State your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Matt Woolman. I serve as Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's great to be back in front of your committee. I just wanted to give you a brief overview. I believe you have a copy of the annual report for the Ag Emergency Account in front of you. This is a report that's due on an annual basis to the legislature by February 1st of each year. As you know, last session, the legislature developed the Ag Emergency and Preparedness Account, and this account was a one-time appropriation of $1 million to allow the department to respond to emergencies when they occur, but also to prepare for emergencies. And so one of the uses of the account that we've used just recently is for Palmer Amber. We dedicated $50,000 to immediately get out in November to respond to Palmer. There are a whole wide variety of other types of diseases or other plant pests, etc., that could influence our ag economy, and we need to be able to be nimble enough to get out and respond to those things when they occur, but also to begin to prepare for them before they get to Minnesota. Hopefully they won't. But one of the uses of the funds ongoing will be doing some preparedness activities. One of the reasons why we were so successful in the high path avian influenza is because the poultry industry had done secure supply plans to understand how would they respond to various different diseases. And I think moving forward, we'll be working with other sectors of our economy to do the similar types of things so that when we have an outbreak or an emergency in a particular area, we can draw a circle around that and begin to quarantine that area rather than drawing a line around the borders of the state of Minnesota and shutting down the entire economy for that sector. So this is very important work, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership in helping get this account established, and I think this is going to be good for the state of Minnesota moving forward.
All right. Any questions for the Deputy Commissioner on this? Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Woolman, you mentioned you were out in the Palmer Amaranth thing last fall. Will there be any follow-up in the spring to see if any seeds have survived and what precautions are in place to make sure that this contaminated seed doesn't come back in again this year?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, last fall in November, we went out, we GPS located all of those on those 13 sites in two counties where we've basically isolated this weed to. And we went out, we scouted all of those fields and GPS located where all those weeds were. We did an intensive burn where we could. And then the spring we'll be going back and we'll be, you know, looking at those GPS coordinates to see if we were successful and to do any other mitigation that might be necessary at that time, but also to look and see if we missed anything. And I think that's really important. Our hope is that we can eradicate this weed, and you know that's the approach that we're taking.
Chair Anderson.
Well, thanks again, Mr. Chair. But just again, Mr. Commissioner, follow up in terms of not letting this contaminated seed back in again. Could you talk about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, we have a robust seed law in Minnesota. And what I think we found is we're in an active investigation right now, getting to the end of that active investigation. And what we found is someone broke the seed law. And, you know, it's similar to other types of emergencies. You know, we have a very robust gold standard, frankly, food statute in Minnesota. And we still have foodborne illness. And so, you know, can we say with 100% certainty that we'll never have Palmer amaranth in seed again? I don't think we can. However, do we have a good degree of certainty in the law and the ability to find those problems? Yes.
Chair Anderson, follow up. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Woolman, or perhaps Mr. Sullivan, unused emergency funds, do they disappear at the end of the biennium, or are they carried forward?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, this is a dedicated account, so it moves forward.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Woolman, let's use the Palmer amaranth example. If there was restitution, if you have a responsible party that is required to pay a penalty, a financial penalty, can that financial penalty be deposited into the emergency account to restore the funds that were provided by the general taxpayers?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I believe that if there is a fine, that fine would go back to the city.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, and refresh my memory, so the seed account is that general dollars, or is that dedicated funds from fees that the seed producers?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I might invite Greg Friso, who is our director of our plant protection unit. He'll be able to answer that question.
Well, we like Mr. Friso. He always, you know, show and tell. So, Mr. Friso, state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Gere Friso, Director of the Plant Protection Division, and I regret I didn't bring anything to show today.
Mr. Friso, you're done. Next. He isn't. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, and as to Representative Hansen's questions, we do have a draft enforcement action. Typically, this is a dedicated program, so any fines collected would go back into the seed account because that's where the action is coming from. It's not from the emergency account.
Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to think about that a little bit because I understand the purpose, but I also, you know, at some point, this may be where you have a very big consequence that you may be at the tip of the iceberg of having to pay for that consequence. I just need to ponder that. And maybe, Mr. Chair, we could talk about that. But I think we should just think about that a little bit.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Wallman. You know, as we've heard that Palmer Amaranth is well established in a neighboring, at least one neighboring state I'm aware of. And so one would assume that even if we have a tight seed law and there's a risk of this coming north from Iowa or from another place. And so I'm curious about what the department anticipates in terms of what your response would be, what sort of resources you would need, and that sort of thing moving forward beyond, after this fiscal year.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, a little later on in the committee hearing, we'll be talking about some of the change requests. And in the change request, we do have a request for $600,000 to our noxious weed program. And that would definitely be of assistance with Palmer Amaranth as well as other weeds.
Representative Johnson?
And thank you. And we'll hear about that later. But while I've got the mic, I just wanted to, again, as I've observed this over the last couple of years, when you use the word nimble, I agree. The department has been nimble and very effective in addressing emergencies. And, boy, it's hard to put a value on that to the state of Minnesota. And this fund is helpful for that. So my compliments to you and everybody who's working with you. This is important work you're doing for agriculture in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. See no other questions on this part, Commissioner. What we're going to do then is we're going to bring forth and have a bill hearing with Representative Smith, okay? And then we'll call you back and we'll start the presentation on the base budget. All right, thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Smith, while he's coming up, Representative Barr, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have.
All right. Representative Barr moves the minutes dated January 31st. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I'll move House File 22 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Smith, welcome to the committee. We have your bill in front of us. If you'd like to explain your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Good morning. House File 22 is the Corporate Farm Law Modification Act. This bill eliminates an unnecessary reporting requirement for farmland that's held in a revocable trust. Currently, there's a $15 fee and a form that needs to be filled out every year. As it turns out, it's not applicable to a revocable trust, and it's really unnecessary. It was an unintended consequence when the bill was written. And this really is a burden to small farmers throughout our state. There's a criminal penalty if there is non-compliance with this. So this bill would eliminate that reporting requirement for our only revocable trusts.
Okay. Any questions? Any questions? Is there anybody that would like to testify for or against this bill? There we go. Any final comments, Representative Smith?
I appreciate your support, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, I'll renew my motion that House File 22 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed. Thank you, Representative Smith. All right, Deputy Commissioner. Our misplaced. So, Deputy Commissioner, like we had talked before we got the committee started, I think what we'd like to do is we can go through certain sections of this, and then we'll pause and take questions as it pertains to that specific area. I want to take our time. We do also have Thursday saved if we need to roll over from today into Thursday, because I want everybody's questions to be answered here. Okay? So, Deputy Commissioner, take it away.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've spent a number of committee hearings going through the Department of Agriculture's work. We've gotten to become familiar with the various different divisions of the department. You got to see some of our show and tell. We'd be happy to bring more back at some point, Mr. Chair. Today, we're primarily going to move into looking at the governor's budget. And I've asked Steve Ernest, who is our finance director at the department, to give you a general overview of the department's budget, and then if you're so inclined, Mr. Chair, we'll walk through the change requests in the governor's budget.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. State your name for the record and begin, please.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Steve Ernest, Finance and Budget Director for the agency.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, I have four slides, and I'll cover an overview of the first nine pages of the budget book. The first page of the budget book shows a standard fiscal 15 historical chart for every agency. It's standard in all the books. My first slide has a slide of the governor's budget for 18-19, how that is broken down by our general program areas. The reason why this slide shows the governor's budget is because if it didn't have the governor's budget, it wouldn't have the clean water funds in there, which are a significant part of our budget. And when we look at the coming slides and the pages of the book, you'll see the difference between the base budget and the governor's budget more clearly. But our protection program is our largest part of our agency and promote at 58% of the whole budget. And 32% is our promotion program, and then administration areas, 10%, shown on this slide. And then on the right-hand side of the slide, we show by the divisions. As you can see, the pest and fertilizer division is the largest of the divisions. And on down the list there for the $232 million, again, this ties to the governor's numbers for the budget in the budget book. The second slide, again, is the governor's budget. This is the expenditures by source fund. So on page 3 of the budget book, we have an expenditure table. This for the dedicated funds is the appropriated amount for the directly appropriated general fund. Sometimes expenditures differ from appropriated. Sometimes operating budgets carry over into the second year, and so you'll see some differences there. But in both, if you look at either the expenditures versus the governor's budget or the appropriated amount, for example, on page 5 for the general fund, the direct appropriated amount for the general fund, the difference between the base columns and the governor's columns is consistent, the consistent growth. So, for example, on page three, we have $8.4 million more in the governor's budget for general fund. That's eight initiatives. We have the $17.6 million in the clean water fund more in the governor's budget. That's the 11 initiatives for the clean water fund. We have $2.5 million more in the ag fund. That's three initiatives for the in the ag fund. And Commissioner Woolman will go through those. On page, or on this slide here, you'll also notice that 11% of our funding comes from federal funds. And on page 93 of the budget book, I'll just mention, is our table summarizing all those federal appropriations, all those federal awards, the purposes for those, and how they're broken out. And then you can see that 8% of our proposed budget for 18-19 is in legacy funds, the clean water funding, which is normally in a separate bill from the operating budget, but it's noted as a whole here. Then if you turn to the third slide, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to forward this. So this is our...
Mr. Ernst, I'm going to pause just for a moment. Members, in your folder, if you go to the front, you've got all those colored slides and everything from the previous testifiers. And we finished up, if you go towards the back of that presentation, you see laboratory services. We went through that last time. Now we're on the MDA budget overview. And so these will match up with what is being shown up on the screen there. So the front part of your book here, MDA budget overview. So everybody see that? All right. And then he's also referring to, when he's talking about agency expenditure overviews, and look at the page numbers, if you go on the tab, the Department of Agriculture tab, the Department of Agriculture tab, and then you can see the page numbers listed below there. So we've got the two areas there. All right, does everybody see that? All right, I think we're all caught up. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please continue.
So on this slide here, you can see for funding sources, approximately 42% of our funding is from our customers through fees. Most of that is in the agricultural fund. And 39% of our funding is from the general fund, from the tax dollars. This slide here, I apologize for the amount of information on it, but I did want to show that when we look at our general fund, for the biennium, that it's not just money for the agency. We have $45.8 million for the agency, and I have listed out there each of the appropriations. They're generally operating appropriations for each of the divisions, some more specific purposes than others. And on the right-hand side, you can see that we do partner with quite a large number of organizations, and our budget helps with a lot of outside efforts in the private sector. We also, for example, on the top there, we have the animal claims, that's the wolf depredation, and the crop claims, the elk damage claims, that go out to people who suffer from those incidents. For example, we have, we partner with the U of M on potato research and wild rice research down towards the middle. Then we have the county fairs, that's the Ag Societies and Associations, $948,000, the Poultry Association and the Livestock Breeders Association. These are grants to help with youth programs, especially to encourage them to learn and encourage them in the growth of their trades. We have money that goes through to the Northern Crops Institute, the Horticultural Society, and the Turf Grass Research programs, which provide for research and promotion of cold hardy products that can be marketed for these cold hardy climates. We have $360,000 for the biennium for the Farm Advocates Program, which is a group of people out there who can take calls and point people towards experts to help them with some challenges they're facing. We partner with Minnesota State System, the MinSCU system, on mental health assistance. The Second Harvest with sort of a secondary market there for milk and surplus food to get some of that out to people in need, and the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council. toward the bottom there. There's another one there located at the University of Minnesota also. And I would also point out that the forestry incentive program, the siding incentive program for $6 million for the biennium, that appropriation is in statute in Chapter 41A, so it's not in the bill as a direct appropriation. It's up to $3 million a year in Chapter 41A. If the program is not utilized, that money just stays in the general fund. And then the final slide here lists all the accounts in the agricultural fund. So, for example, at the bottom, the Ag Emergency Fund, as authorized in Chapter 17 of statute. Just above that, the corporate farm account, where those $15 fees you were just looking at go, and on up the list, and the approximate amounts of the budget for the biennium for each of these accounts. I did put lines in between the divisions of the agency, which deal with each of these accounts also. Pages 3 through 9 of the budget book do list each fund separately and show the amounts for that fund in the base budget and the governor's budget. And as I pointed out, our initiatives that Commissioner Wolman will go through are in the general fund, the clean water fund, and the ag fund. And that is my presentation.
Okay. Any questions, members? Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to walk through our change item requests. The first one is the continuous improvement IT investment.
And Commissioner, is that part of this presentation?
I'm sorry?
Yes.
It is part of the presentation. It should be following right after the MDA budget overview, and it should say,
okay,
towards the end of that presentation.
All right. Thank you. Please continue.
So, Mr. Chair, if our presentation follows a track, and I'm going to try to call out the page number for each of the change requests in the budget book, in case you need more information. This first one is the...
Commissioner, I think it would be helpful if we can do the presentation and then go, instead of jumping back and forth, it makes it a little confusing. Okay. So if we either go through the one or the other, I guess is what I'm saying initially.
We'll go through the PowerPoint.
Would you
like me just to mention the page number for each of them, and then if you need more, you can pull that up, or no?
That's fine.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, the continuous improvement IT investment, what this proposal is right now, several of our licensing and permitting processes are still on paper. And we've historically been a very lean agency. But I think the times are coming where we need to make a significant investment in IT infrastructure to enhance efficiency as well as customer service for the people that we serve. A lot of our farmers, a lot of our licensees are looking for online applications to be able to submit their application for a retail food license, for example. This will help us to improve the internal business functions of the agency. We don't have any direct appropriation for continuous improvement activities, particularly around IT, and as a result, we've fallen behind some other agencies who do have that investment. This would allow us to identify some key business needs and prioritize the areas that we can make the greatest improvement first. This change request is outlined on page 25 of the budget book. Mr. Chair, I'll just pause on this request if there are any. Did you want to pause after each of the change items?
Just keep going.
Keep going?
Yeah, thank you.
The second change request is outlined on page 16 of the budget book. This is the plant pathology critical lab capacity at the Department of Agriculture for $1 million general fund. We're looking for this capacity to do rapid detection, identification, containment, management of high priority plant pests and pathogens. Right now, we do a visual sample or a visual analysis of grain, for example, that we need to do an export certificate for. This would allow us to actually do lab analysis to ensure that the certificates that we're handing out mean something. And so what we're seeing is with a changing trade environment, a lot of times countries will have certain requirements that an exporter needs to meet. And in order to meet those requirements, a lot of times they need some sort of a laboratory analysis to put on that export certificate. So this is critically important to not only address emerging threats as we move forward, but also to deal with a changing environment on the global landscape. The next item, Mr. Chair, is our noxious weed proposal. This is for $600,000 in general funds. This would provide needed resources to fund additional staff and to train staff to continue to have oversight and enforcement of Minnesota's noxious weed law. Currently, we have two noxious weed staff at the department, two staff for the entire state. This request would give us an additional two, and it would help us to partner and have better communication with the local level to address noxious weed issues. The recent discovery of Palmer amaranth, as we talked about a little bit earlier, I think underscores the need for a strong and proactive noxious weed program in Minnesota. The next item, Mr. Chair, is developing Minnesota's next generation of crops. It's a $2 million general fund appropriation request. This would partner with the University of Minnesota's Forever Green program, which is doing research on different types of cropping systems that can provide perennial cover, provide an economic pathway to addressing some of the water quality issues that the state is facing, but also to deal with this changing landscape that many food companies are facing to meet sustainability goals and requirements. Right now, Forever Green is working with two companies, one in particular, General Mills, that is interested in offsetting some of their flour use with other types of more sustainable uses. There's also PepsiCo, which is doing research and working with Forever Green on pennycress, and they're using that pennycress oil to develop polymers for in Dorito bags. So this is I've always contended that the way that we deal with water quality is if we can find an economic pathway. This is looking for that next generation of cropping systems, which I believe is really important.
We do have a question. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I would assume that the university also does work on the same type of thing, cover crops, next generation crops. How do you coordinate and work with them to not duplicate services?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, we've been working in coordination with the University of Minnesota's Forever Green program to develop this proposal. And what this would do is it would do the work to develop the agronomic research and develop the trials and work with producers to establish this on their land, to do test files and then also to work with them in developing a market around these various different crops. So Forever Green is doing the research around the genetics and the varieties and doing the research around the nutrition work that needs to be done. The other end of this is figuring out how do we implement it. And this is working with Forever Green in conjunction with them to do implementation.
Jerry Anderson. So is this a base funding, an additional $2 million? Has this been funded before?
Commissioner. Chair, this is a new request. Forever Green does have base funding through the Clean Water, or I shouldn't say base funding. They have funding through the Clean Water Legacy request. This is a one-time ask of $2 million.
Jerry Anderson. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And going back to the noxious weed program, if I could, real quick. Is that going to be working in conjunction with our county weed control officers, or what's the plan with that? Because in talking to ours in my home county last week, he said that they would just soon get rid of this program because they have no funding to implement it.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, we would be coordinating with the local weed inspectors. Our noxious weed program does that now. However, we only have two staff to do that. We believe that if we can get this additional investment, we'll have better capacity to do communication and outreach and working with the local weed inspectors to make progress on this end.
Representative Eklund.
So I guess it goes back to my question, Commissioner. Is it enough, or is it just a start?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I think I refer to Dear Friso.
Welcome back, Mr. Friso. Like to take that question?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representatives. I think it will be a significant improvement. We have gone many, many years on basically flat funding for the noxious weed program. We work very closely with the counties and townships. In fact, we're doing training starting this week with the counties. I think this additional support will allow us to really build up and enhance our ability to work with those counties. So I do see it as a very significant improvement in our overall abilities.
Representative Eklund, you okay? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just wasn't quite sure that I heard what you said. Did you say Pennycrest being used to work with PepsiCo?
Commissioner.
Wasn't
sure, yes.
Pennycrest, and that's different from Pennywort.
Commissioner?
Is it a different plant than Pennywort, thank you, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair, it's Pennycrest.
Mr. Chair, I've just never heard of that.
No, Clark.
Maybe it's a common plant that I don't know about. I don't know anymore, but Pennycrest is a new plant.
Mr. Chair, it is a cover crop that can be planted. It can be planted actually in conjunction with other typical row crops, and then harvested early in the spring. And the seed from that Pennycrest is oil that they're looking at uses for farmers. Another year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't have to be today, but sometime I'd be interested in seeing how we are working with those corporations, what their part is, like who gets the funding. I think you mentioned General Mills and PepsiCo. I'm curious. We don't have to talk about it now, but I would be interested to know what that money goes to them, or that goes to the farmers, or how is that split apart?
All right. Commissioner? Okay.
Chair.
Chair Anderson. Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Eklund's question, I think what he was getting at was funding for the counties, and I think what this does is fund the department. But I think we have a wide variation among the counties in terms of what they do, what they have funding for. Some counties have weed inspectors that do a lot of things, and some don't. So how can we even out the whole thing among the counties and the state to give us a more robust weed inspection program? Will this address disparities in county weed inspection funding?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I'll take that one. Whitney Place, Director of Government Affairs at the Department. There is a grant, a separate grant program that we have authorized in the department that can grant out money to counties. At this time, there's no funding in that account, and I know there is some legislation that has been introduced to fund that.
Chair Anderson. Okay. All right, please continue.
Mr. Chair, the next item up is a $400,000 general fund request for industrial hemp development. As you know, last session the department or the legislature funded and the department has moved forward to establish funding for a pilot industrial hemp program. We have piloted this program in seven farms, totaling about 40 acres. It was very successful in 2016. There were some challenges. We had to work through the DEA permit, as well as, you know, acquiring seed and some of those types of things. However, we learned a lot in that process. There's great interest in this program. We just held a meeting at the department a couple weeks ago where we invited members, our interested farmers who are interested in participating in this program moving forward. We had over 50 people come to the department to learn more, and so I expect 2017 will be a very successful year. This would also help us to create new markets again. One of those strengths, as I mentioned earlier or a few weeks ago in our presentation, one of the strengths of Minnesota agriculture is the fact that we have a very diverse agricultural economy, and this is just another way that we can continue to make improvements and strengthen our economy moving forward. The next item, Mr. Chair, is a pollinator protection account. This is for $1 million in general fund appropriation, $500,000 and dedicated. This would create a pollinator protection account to ensure that funds are available to increase the protection of Minnesota's pollinators from negative impacts. The pollinator protection account was called for in the governor's executive order, and we, you know, recently did a special registration review at the Department of Agriculture outlining what kinds of things are needed to continue to protect pollinators going forward. And one of the things is really developing better education, not only for producers but others, about how we can use pesticide products in the most judicious way, by being good stewards of how we do that. This pollinator protection account would help us support some of the research surrounding that, as well as developing that pesticide stewardship campaign and stewardship materials moving forward. The goal is to really increase, or rather decrease, pollinator exposure to pesticides. Mr. Chair, if there's any questions on that one, if not, I'll move forward.
Please continue.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the next item is $1.5 million in dedicated. This is a waste pesticide fee collection increase. The Department of Agriculture partners with counties all across Minnesota. I think we have a partnership with nearly every county in Minnesota to do waste collection of pesticides. So whether you're a farmer or a homeowner in town and you have some waste pesticides sitting in your garage or in your machine shed that you need to get rid of, this is a way to basically provide a venue to dispose of those waste pesticides. The program has been increasing over the years, and the highest growth of the pesticides that we're seeing coming into the program are frankly non-agricultural pesticides. There's far more non-agricultural pesticides than there are agricultural. For example, we currently have registered about 10,000 non-ag pesticides. These are the kinds of products that you would find on the Menards or Home Depot or your local hardware shelf. And then there's about 3,600 agricultural pesticides that we have registered in Minnesota. So this would increase the registration fee to cover the cost of the waste disposal program. Currently, the program costs are exceeding revenues by about $400,000 per year. We're supplementing the program through the pesticide regulatory account, which there are other uses for the pesticide regulatory account going forward.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Woolman. So the non-ag could go to a household hazardous waste collection, correct? So I'm in South St. Paul and I've got a can of 2,4-D that's 10 years old, that can go to the Dakota County household hazardous waste, can go to the recycling center there. Doesn't have to go to a set-up waste pesticide collection, correct?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is true, but we still hold these waste collection pesticide days in every county across Minnesota.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, way back in the last century, when we worked on these issues, the first collections, we picked up, the state picked up old arsenic grasshopper bait. There was a lot of what I would call legacy with a small L waste pesticides on farms. I remember one site where a widow came in and had a truck full of stuff that had been in the barn since her husband had passed. And it sounds as if that legacy or that held waste pesticide that was there has been picked up. And so we have new waste being generated each year. And after, so 1989, we're at working on going on 30 years of the program. So we've picked up the old stuff, probably, and now we're into picking up current stuff that gets created. And what you're saying is we have more stuff coming in that may be rural residents but not farmers, but they're still paying the pesticide fee anyway. Pesticide fee isn't just on agricultural pesticides. It's on all of this stuff. So the program is servicing people who've paid the fees into it. But are you getting a different audience or different materials than you were when the program started 30 years ago?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes. We're seeing a significant growth in non-ag pesticides. And the costs of looking at those items are different than agricultural pesticides. So, for example, if we get a container that has a larger volume of a particular agricultural pesticides and we get, you know, five or six smaller containers of non-ag pesticides, it's more work and more expense to the program to dispose of the non-ag pesticides. And so that's what we're trying to reflect here in the fees that are being generated.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Woolman, do you have any programs of educational programs, either with Extension or with, you know, I see farmers unions in the audience. They're probably not the ones that are making those choices, but some targeted education of buy what you need. I know that's hard at a retail place to say buy only what you need, but if prevention is cheaper than gathering this material and taking it to a hazardous waste incineration facility. If people don't, they buy what they need and don't try to hold it over, and then 10 years later the state has to pick that up and then haul it. I think it was in Illinois, right? It's RJ, Illinois, that we have to haul it to and incinerate it. So is there any educational effort on trying to reduce that amount of waste, particularly from the non-farm agricultural or pesticide user?
Commissioner.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we always encourage people to be judicious about their use and, you know, practice good stewardship. And you know, we work to educate not only our registrants but also pesticide applicators about how they can do that. Is there a formal program per se around education? Not really.
Representative Hansen. All right. Okay. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, talking about the non-ag pesticides, those 10,000, is that an annual fee you assess against them? Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Chair Anderson?
I sometimes should not try to do math quickly in my head, but going from $50 to $125 per pesticide, that's an increase of $750,000 according to my addition. Is that correct? Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, currently we collect about $500,000 in fees from non-ag pesticide. We'd be increasing that to $1.25 million. And on ag pesticides, we currently collect about $182,000 roughly. And we'd be moving that to about $273,000 under this proposal. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Chair Anderson. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, it does answer my question. But I guess my comment is, if you're $400,000 short, you're really going long by quite a bit. And I would question whether we have to have that large an increase in that pesticide account.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Commissioner, please continue.
Mr. Chair, the next one is a food certificate fee increase. As you know, again, this goes back to the trade and export markets. We need to have certificates of free sale to enter into certain countries or certain markets. These certificates over the years have become much more complex and much more specialized, and in some cases require a significant amount of work. What this fee account would do is essentially create a dedicated account, and then it would allow the department to fund for the cost of that particular project and keep that revenue within the dedicated account at the department. It would allow us again to accurately reflect the cost of doing this work. It allows us to, again, be a little bit more nimble and allow us to move more quickly and to respond to requests or companies as the need should arise.
Thank you.
The last one I don't have a slide for, but I do want to call it out. On page 27 of the budget book, the department does have a change request for maintaining current service levels. So if there was no other change to the budget, based on costs to address normal salary increases as well as IT cost increases and rent increases, we would need basically $46,000 in fiscal year 18 and $1.3 million in fiscal year 19 just to maintain our current levels of service at the department. So this is a an operating adjustment that is included in the budget request as well.
Okay. We do have a question. We are going to pause at quarter after. We have a special guest we need to recognize. They have to be leaving by 20 after. So, Chair Green.
Well, I appreciate that promotion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
That seems like an awful lot of an increase there, but and it looks like you're going to, is that one new FTE for that portion? Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, the one new FTE is a position that would have been eliminated and will be maintained by this proposal if it is funded. If that answers your question.
Representative Green.
It kind of does, but I was going through the budget here, and I see you have a lot of FTEs, and I'm wondering, do you have, is there a total of new FTEs or reduction of FTEs and the total increase you're looking at?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, staff is looking for that number here right now.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you have to recognize someone, we can certainly wait as long as they're looking
right.
Anyway.
Pardon me, Ms. Place?
I'll add FTE as well. You do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Green. We're going to go ahead and do that. Representative Hansen has a resolution. Is Tom Peterson in the room? Tom, you have a special guest with you, don't you, today? I can't. All right. Well, President Doug Peterson, please. So, well,
good morning, Chair.
Good morning. I tell you what, we have a resolution we'd like to share with everybody, simply to recognize you for your years of service, to say thank you, and then we'd also like to hear from you. So if I could turn over to Representative Hansen, please.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Peterson. It's a long resolution because...
Well.
You've done a lot of work, so we want to buckle in. We've got a long resolution here.
I'll take notes.
A House resolution honoring Doug Peterson on the occasion of his retirement. Whereas Doug Peterson grew up on a family farm south of Madison, Minnesota, and began his formal education in a one-room schoolhouse, he is a graduate of Augustana College in Sioux Falls, and after graduation he was a teacher and a coach in Glencoe, Minnesota, before returning to Lacaparral County to run the family farm. And whereas Doug was elected to the Minnesota House of Representatives in 1990 and was reelected five times, and while serving in the legislature in 1996, he founded and served as chair of the Right to Be Rural Coalition. And whereas Doug was elected president of the Minnesota Farmers Union in April 2002 and reelected in November 2003, and again, every 2 years since that date until his retirement, Doug is widely recognized for his leadership on several rural issues, including renewable fuels. And whereas, as MFU president, Doug led groups of farmers to Washington, D.C. on several occasions to push for improved federal farm policies, Doug's role as MFU president included leadership duties for the organization's state policy work. And whereas, there's a few whereases. As MFU president, Doug Peterson created Minnesota Cooks, which brings together those who value and support our sustainable food system. Doug also served as the National Farmers Union Secretary, Board Chair for Farmers Union Enterprises, Vice Chair for the National Farmers Union Foundation, Chair of the National Farmers Union Committee on Feeding America, and as a World Farmers Organization voting delegate. And whereas Doug's father, Harry, served as a state representative from 1964 to 1974, and after Doug's 12 years as state representative ended in 2002, his son Aaron was elected to serve in the same district, making this the only time in state history that a family has had members of three consecutive generations elected to the legislature. And whereas Doug and his wife Ellie have two sons, Aaron and Ryan, and Doug is a licensed auctioneer and an artist known for his portrayals of wildlife, and whereas on December 31st, 2016, Doug Peterson retired after serving the Minnesota Farmers Union for 14 years and as a state legislator for 12 years prior, now, therefore, be it resolved by the Committee of Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives and of the State of Minnesota that it thanks and commends Doug Peterson for his outstanding contributions to his community as a state legislator, as a president of the Minnesota Farmers Union, and extends best wishes to him for his retirement. Mm. Dated January 19th, Speaker, Chair of the Rules Committee, and Chair Hamilton.
President.
Well, yeah, thanks for that. One doesn't realize when you start out being an advocate before you're elected how many years it'll take you. I think you described elected position. I actually started out running for the House of Representatives in 1976 and had been elected. If I would have been elected, that would have been a long career. So I consider my career advocacy role 40 plus years. I just want to thank you, Chair Hamilton, and also all of the legislators that are sitting and serving. And there's a few I've served with, and we know each other quite well. And there are a few others that we'll know down the road. We have elected a new president, Gary Wertisch. He's over here. That's Gary. And he'll do well, because I taught him everything I knew, and that was about this much. But I would like to also introduce one person that's been with me since ninth grade, my wife, Ellie. And I look back on lots of things that, you know, first of all, I think about the ethanol, and the ethanol wars that we had way back from 1990, and then we had the biodiesel wars after that. I was involved in a lot of that. And I remember as a freshman legislator, now that I can still remember, in 1990, then Speaker Vanosik gave me a bill and said, see what you can do with this. It was called the hazmat bill. So the hazmat stuff that everybody knows about, the chemicals and the spills and all that, I authored that bill in 1991 legislative session. Okay, and of course everybody adds to it and funds it after that, so you have to take a lot of give a lot of people a lot of credit for agreeing with you. One of my unknown, and I'm going to, because it's all really about rural communities and commitment to rural communities when you're serving in the legislature, and I'm going to say that in 1993, mandate, it's a bad word sometimes. However, if you were in a rural community and you were on a four-party line system for your telephone, anybody remember that? Okay. Yeah, well, there's not a lot of hands, you know. In 1993, I dumped a bill in that said by 1990, yeah, in other words, I gave him 2 years. That was nice. I gave him 2 years to get rid of all of the party lines in the state of Minnesota. And in 1996, we got our computer at the farm, well, in the legislature, and we got dial-up. We had dial-up until, what, 2 years ago? Okay. So that up and down speed is very important. Another piece that I remember quite well was the fact that
when we start looking at recreational vehicles, that would be snowmobiles, four-wheelers, now side-by-sides, personal watercraft, and boating. In 1997, we also had the largest deaths by snowmobiles during that winter, 97, and 97, the spring of that year, was the big flood, which cost a lot of money. I put together a bill with all the county sheriffs and all the county officers and the DNR and the Judiciary Committee. So if you want to have pure fear in your heart as a legislator, go in front of the Judiciary Committee, because they're all lawyers, and it's commas and periods and all those kinds of things. I put together a bill that made all of that recreation vehicles in a uniform code so that law enforcement officers and regulation as testing would be the same. It had never been done before. I'm sure it's changed by now, but that was those are the major highlights of what I've done over those number of years. I call it 40-plus years. And I just want to thank you today very much from the bottom of our heart and our family's heart, the fact that our family has given 28 years to the legislature. And that's a big deal. I know a lot of people make a lot of personal sacrifices, family, time, friends, and those things. And this is more of a full-time job than anything else, but it's a good job, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel good about what you do. And if you're in the majority, treat the minority with respect, and if you're in the minority, treat the majority with respect. And always make sure that you have the ability to work together. Rural Minnesota needs you, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Very nice. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for reading that as well. And we'll let give a little bit of time for people to move. And all right. Well, Commissioner, thank you for allowing us to take that very important pause. So appreciate that. Please. I think we were back to Representative Green's question, correct?
Yes. Mr. Chair, we've totaled this up. It's 13 and a half FTEs under the general fund, two for under dedicated or the agricultural account, one in
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
One in food.
I'd rather stop and know, because I don't hear very good with background noise.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So if you could start over. Should be a help. Thanks.
All right. Good point, Representative Green. We'll wait for the crowd to keep moving to the door here. So, all right. Thank you for doing that, Commissioner. Please, if you could, and maybe speak into the mic a little bit more here. So, all right.
That's good.
So, I'll start over if you would, please.
Certainly sympathetic to not hearing. I don't hear well either, and so thank you for that. There are 13 and a half FTEs funded through the change requests under the general fund. There are two that are being funded through fees, one for pollinators and one for food. And then there's one FTE that's maintenance that's under the maintaining current service levels.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are all new FTEs in this budget. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, there would be 16 and a half new FTEs under this budget.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what will that bring your total to?
Commissioner, I think we had outlined earlier in the our earlier presentation that we were up here for the exact number.
And Mr. Chair, as long as they're looking that up, maybe they could also look up what the total cost of those FTEs would be. And then if you can't find it right now, go ahead and do the rest of your report. That would be fine.
Mr. Chair, I can calculate that and get back to the committee.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact number or FTEs on me here right now, okay. But it's
Well, on this place is calculating those. We'll go to Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. I'm looking back at this industrial hemp development, and in your testimony a few weeks ago, I think you said there were 38 acres, and there were just a handful of farmers that were in this business. With this $400,000 in expanding this program, how many additional acres and farms do you anticipate will be added?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. We had 7 pilot sites in 2016 that accounted for roughly 40 acres. We had an informational meeting about 2 weeks ago at the department. We had over 50 interested parties come to the department to learn more about the 2017 growing season. I believe we're currently taking applications for those since this is a pilot program, but I would expect significant increase in interest in 17.
Right. Representative Poston?
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the commissioner? Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to highlight your efforts with the developing Minnesota's next generation of crops, and really want to applaud the department's efforts, but also industry and certainly the university and Representative Bly and others who have really worked hard on developing the perennials that have the potential to change the landscape and have tremendous impact, particularly on nitrates in the water. And with the governor's new initiative of reduction of impairments by 25, it seems to me this plays an important role in that. Can you explain that a little bit?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative Clark Johnson, sorry. I think when we look at agriculture and the water quality nexus, I think what's really a fundamental problem is we have a water quality problem because we have an economic problem. When you look at producers go to the marketplace. One of the only sectors of the economy that goes to the marketplace and asks for a price. We literally, as the commissioner likes to talk about, as farmers, we go on bended knee asking, how much will you give me for this bushel of corn or this bushel of soybeans? When you look at cities, they're being asked to, increase their requirements, and ratepayers have to pay the cost of those infrastructure investments. And you look at the business community, whether it's General Mills or others, Land O'Lakes, they're being pressured by consumers to provide foods that are more sustainable and to be able to make that commitment to the environment. So what we have often thought at the department is that the solution to some of these problems is finding an economic pathway for farmers to do the right thing, but also not have to compromise their business or their income. And, when you look at the investment that we made in the 1950s around soybeans at the University of Minnesota, the state of Minnesota invested in soybean research. We continue to do soybean research at the University of Minnesota. The yields in 1950 were not very good. Today, we have varieties that will yield 60 to 70 bushel under the right kinds of circumstances. And so if we're going to look to the next generation and looking at the 25x25 goal and figuring out how can we use these types of cropping systems that have multiple benefits, economic benefits as well as water quality benefits, as well as business competitive benefits, making the investment now is going to lead to these results, not tomorrow, but in the longer term, making that investment will lead to the different types of results that we're all looking for.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to just really say, ever since I've been on this committee, I really think this is an area that has a lot of merit. We've got to find a way, if we're going to address water quality in as it relates to agriculture, we've got to find these markets. It's got to be economically viable. And so I best wishes as we move forward on this, and I hope the committee seriously considers this request. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the commissioner? Any other questions? Commissioner, just briefly. Oh, yes,
Mrs. Chair, I believe we have a response to Representative Green's earlier question if this would be an appropriate time.
Yes, of course.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, on pages 3 and 4 of the budget book, we do have compensation and STE numbers. So towards the bottom of page 3, you'll see a compensation line under expenditure by category. Those would be the dollars for our payroll. $41.3 million is the base for 18, for example. And then turning the page, you'll see our base numbers for FTEs, 460 in 18, and then in the governor's budget, 508. I would point out that the 15.5 that we've been talking about are in the general fund and the ag fund. And then there's the other part of the addition are the clean water fund positions, which most of them are in our budget now. It's just that the funding has to be renewed every 2 years, so they're shown as new also. And the FTE count does change on a daily basis, and we do have a significant number of seasonal employees also.
Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have to walk me through this because I don't see 41,000. I see... Oh, okay, over there, that's for the proposed in 2018. Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay, so then what, I didn't write it down, if you said it, how many total full-time employees do you have?
We have...
Mr. Ernest.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Green. We're tracking about 475, 460. The number we have on page 4 for fiscal 18 as our base number is 460.5, and this number changes regularly. And then we show the 508 two columns over as the governor's budget, which includes 15.5 in general fund and ag fund, and I think it's 30 some in the clean water fund that is the legacy funding bill. So we're right around between 450 to 500 generally all the time.
Okay.
Representative Green.
Yeah, that's fine.
Any other questions for the commissioner? One simple question here. In the base budget report, you have a line item in here for $55,000 for country of origin labeling. That's no longer in existence at the federal level. And so do we need that $55,000 in that area? It's on the base budget report on page 10 of 24. So that's a question we can address offline here as well.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take a look at that and respond to you.
All right. Representative Clark.
Just, Mr. Chairman, just on that question, considering all the discussion today about, homegrown and trade and everything, Are we preempted from doing that as a state, or is that just the fact that the feds aren't doing it now? I mean, is there a reason we might not want to still continue that in Minnesota?
Well, that's a question directed at me.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So this is for the being in compliance with country of origin labeling that was at the national level, which is no longer in play. And I don't think, well, I know that myself, and we could ask the farm groups here, I don't think that we want to have country of origin labeling just for Minnesota and have to label everything just to meet Minnesota here. So we do have somebody coming up. State your name for the record and begin, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Dr. Ben Miller, Division Director for the Food and Feed Safety Division. I think, and we'll go back to you on this for certain, but I think the modification to cool country of origin labeling was around, specifically around meat labeling for beef and pork muscle cuts. So the program still exists for other commodity types. So it's true that there was, you know, a repeal of that particular section, but I think, you know, the remainder of that program remains intact. We can get you the final answer, though. Just wanted to make that clarification, though.
All right, thank you.
Sure, no problem. Mr. Chair, Representative, I was just saying that the change in the country of origin labeling was the removal of mandatory country of origin labeling requirements for beef and pork, muscle cuts, ground beef, and ground pork, but the rule still applies to a lot of other commodities like produce and things like that. So the rule did change, but it's still in effect for different commodities.
All right. Thank you for the clarification. Representative Mahoney? All right. Yeah. Any other questions for the commissioner? Seeing none. Commissioner, you have any other remarks?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bearing with us over the last few committee hearings to better understand the department's work, and we do just a tremendous amount of work, and I hope that you would agree that there's a lot of value in that work that our staff provide every day to citizens of Minnesota and to farmers across the state. And this is an important economy to our state, and it's, I think, important to invest in the Department of Agriculture. So I look forward to working with you and members of the committee, Mr. Chair, as we move forward on considering this budget.
All right, thank you. Since we're wrapping this up, we will not be meeting on Thursday. Right? And everybody knows how to get a hold of the commissioner in this place if we have any additional questions. I'm going through this also, and I'm going to have a few questions as well on the base budget, so we can sit down and visit with that. So with that, members, we are adjourned.